Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Happy birthday, Kendrick Lamar. Mama Momo hanging out on a Wednesday. She may rap Sir Mix-a-Lot later. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Lindsay Theory will join us in 6 minutes. So, Momo, we were talking about the potential ramifications. So Paul Pierce yesterday, and we will comb through the manual today. We will comb through it like we're in Spaceballs combing the desert. But we will comb through the manual, the NBA's restart manual. But Paul Pierce brought up an interesting point, which next year the NBA could be much like in the position of Major League Baseball, where they could be arguing over money. There could be a lot more. Now, granted, there's a salary cap and there's a split in the BRI, as you mentioned. Baseball doesn't have those, right? So it's less complicated with the NBA, but it's still not uncomplicated, is I guess the way to describe it. So like Giannis, for example, teams right now are saving up for Giannis, but they may not know what the hell they need to save to be in the Giannis game at this point, just to use him as one example.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what everybody is trying to figure out in the league right now, is like, what does this mean for next year? Because there's so many strange unintended consequences. I mean, last time we had this in the opposite direction, where the cap went up significantly. There was a spike after we did the new TV deal, and you know, the Warriors just got $20 million extra and they were able to go get Kevin Durant. This may be like the opposite, and you may have to change up your teams. Like, and I think the owners are working to make sure that it doesn't have a punitive effect. Like, let's say a team like the Warriors, where they are built, you know, right now, there's a scenario where the Warriors actually have a package of assets to go trade for Giannis. There is.
Right.
I don't know if you'd want to do that. I don't think you'd want to trade Klay Thompson for in a package for Giannis, right? But you do have those assets. But do you actually have those assets if the cap goes down, right? Because they're already in the luxury tax. Like, do they have to pay even more luxury tax if the cap goes down? Should there be sort of a amnesty on that? I mean, it's going to be really, really complicated. But Milwaukee's a team where their whole plan is to show Giannis that he can win there, that he should stay because they're going to keep building a team around him. Well, if the cap goes down, it gets harder and harder to keep that team around him. It's harder to keep the role players that are necessary to build out that team. What's it going to do for mid-level exception players? That's usually the only way good teams can sign players. I mean, that's going to be really, really tough. And not to mention, like, I'm not a salary cap person like Bobby Marks, so I can't just like spit out what the number is going to be. But if the number that Giannis is going to get is not going to be as high as it potentially was, before, why would he sign the Supermax then? Why wouldn't you just wait?
Oh, no, wait and just go into free agency. Yeah, and see what's available.
Yeah, because you can get maybe you can get the Supermax a year later, back when the league and the economy have recovered, hopefully. And then the money's more.
Yeah.
So I think that's really complicated for some teams that have been trying to plan and build a certain way for years and years, and now this is just throwing everything off the rails.
I don't know about you, but look, you and I work on contracts, right? And when our contracts are up, you know, it doesn't mean we don't love where we work, where we've worked for a very long time. But you know, our representation does their due diligence, and you know, they flirt with other people, and during the window that they're allowed to flirt with other people and see what's out there, and does it benefit you? I feel like if I were a professional athlete, I mean, we do it here in this industry. If I were a professional athlete, I would go through with free agency every chance I got, particularly if I was young and healthy and all that, and I didn't have an injury history or anything like that. So if I'm Giannis, I'm not signing the Supermax, especially if they don't win the championship this year. I'm not signing the Supermax because, again, as you said, we don't even know what the hell it's going to look like now as we've added this particular layer into it. And then I just want to see who's available. Like, could the Lakers have money? Could the Warriors have money? Like, who in the Eastern Conference would have money that would be more interesting for me on my quest to win a championship, right? Like, I would always want to see what my options are.
You mean like the Miami Heat? Is that...
I mean, like they are one of those teams that have been poised to have very little, a ton of cap space that year. So yeah, maybe.
It's interesting looking at the teams that could, but also the teams that could get really hurt by this. And I know that all the cap guys are studying this day in and day out, and it all comes down to whether or not we have fans. Do we have fans for 2021 for 2020 and 2021 season? Mm-hmm. If you have fans for half the season, like let's say there's a vaccine, so I think that what I talked to one cap guy who's sort of modeling this, George, and it's they do models based on, do we have fans for half the season? Do we have fans for none of the season? Do we have a limited amount of fans, but not all fans, right? And so they have to do all this different modeling of how much money they could potentially have, how much money the league could potentially have based on, when fans come back and how they come back or if they come back. And it's really hard to make decisions. Like, I don't know how you're going to do free agency this year when you have to decide about contract extensions to rookies. Can you give people max extensions if you don't know how much money you're going to be taking in as a team next year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know that, but let's get back to that in a minute. We can do reckless speculation on that in a few minutes.
I love that.
Yeah, Lindsay Theory joins us now here on 710 ESPN. Lindsay, hope you and yours are safe and healthy, and we got a lot of things we want to discuss with you here in a few minutes. But let's start with the news of the day, right? That Anthony Lynn made some comments that teams would be, quote, crazy to not have Colin Kaepernick on their workout list. So I guess the first question should be, how do the LA teams fall into that particular category?
Yeah, so Anthony Lynn obviously said that. As far as whether or not Colin Kaepernick is currently on the Chargers workout list, he is not. Anthony said that he has not spoken with Colin, that he's not sure exactly what Colin's plans are, if he wants to continue playing in the NFL. But he did say that Colin does fit their system and what they're trying to do. So Anthony Lynn certainly seems very open to the possibility of bringing in Colin Kaepernick. But right now, no official plans of that, just to make that very, very clear, because I know there's been some confusion this morning. As far as the Rams, now the Rams are in a really interesting position also, because they have Jared Goff and they have John Wolford. And I know Mina Kimes is a huge John Wolford fan, I should say. But he's never actually played in the NFL. So can he be a backup quarterback? The Rams certainly think so right now. But right now, only two quarterbacks plus a couple other kind of more training camp guys that they've signed. So we'll see if there's any interest on their end. Although I don't think Colin's style would exactly fit what Sean McVay has kind of put in place with Jared Goff.
Interesting. Well, I think that even that he acknowledged it is a good thing. We need a few other teams to do the same. And then now you have a little bit of a market and it's realistic, but we haven't heard from Kaepernick, have we? I mean, do we know what he wants?
I have not seen anything from Colin Kaepernick regarding whether he wants to still play in the NFL, whether he'd be willing to take some workouts. I haven't seen anything on that.
Lindsay Theory hanging out with us here. Lindsay, then let's kind of just evolve to discuss what's on this particular roster. Let's start with the Chargers from a quarterback standpoint. I mean, basically, they've got Tyrod Taylor, who is clearly familiar with Anthony Lynn from their days in Buffalo. He created an offense for him there. And they've got two young guys. One guy who's eventually going to have his name on the marquee, and Easton Stick, who, is a fifth-round pick. If you're the Chargers, not saying that, as you already illustrated, right, that they're going to bring in Colin, but wouldn't a veteran quarterback behind Tyrod Taylor be smart from a roster construction standpoint?
It's hard to say, because we've seen so many teams recently have that veteran quarterback like a Tyrod Taylor, and it's fair to think he's a veteran. He started three seasons in Buffalo. And then they have the rookie right behind him, right? We saw that with Sam Darnold out in New York. We've seen that in various places across the league. So right now, that's kind of how the Chargers are set up. You have Tyrod Taylor, and then you have Justin Herbert right there kind of waiting, learning from him, and potentially getting ready to take over. So That's definitely a model we've seen. Now, that's not to say you can't have another veteran quarterback on your roster, but I would almost say that's more of the exception rather than the norm, the way that these teams are constructed anymore with the salary cap and whatnot.
Hey, Linz, you know, I feel like we're operating in a world where the NFL is just pretending the virus doesn't exist. Like, it's just, like,
what virus are we talking about? I mean, this has been business as usual. This has been chaos for the last 3 months.
I know. It's amazing. Like, they had the draft, like, no big deal. We just did some Zoom calls and casual Roger Goodell at home. Like, I mean, but we are getting to the point now where players going to have to start showing up, and, you know, there's got to be some health and safety protocols. And George and I are going through the NBA's list, and it's like 113 pages of how to keep people safe. And, like, I don't hear anything about the NFL. Like, are they just going to play and just hope it works out?
You know, I think the NFL's 113 pages. I saw that. The game room sounds interesting. But with the NFL, it's like they're waiting until the last possible minute to make some of these decisions. And the thing that we've heard from coaches time and time again is obviously this is changing. Everything with the virus is changing almost daily, what we know, what we don't know. So the NFL is really kind of putting off some of these decisions. Last we talked to Sean McVay, he said veteran players reporting July 28th, and obviously some guidelines about health and safety have been released. And when you read those and you think of social distancing and then you think of the Rams' current setup in Thousand Oaks at inside their modular buildings, let me tell you, space is a bit hard to come by. And they just put a video up of their new locker room layout in there, and it's like, well, that definitely wasn't designed for social distancing unless you have maybe, you know, 10% of the team in there at a time. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this works out, because as it stands, you know, teams will need some time to implement some of this stuff because it's not going to be second nature by any measure.
Lindsay, since we're talking about the Rams, how much pressure is there on the coaching staff this year? I mean, you bring in a new offensive coordinator, a young offensive coordinator, an aggressive offensive coordinator who's coached some really good linebackers in his tenures with the Bears and with the Broncos, and, you know, pass rushing linebackers, et cetera. But, you know, Sean doesn't have the weapons that he's had at his disposal in the past either. Like, what kind of pressure is there on this coaching staff?
I don't think there's a lot, because I think the expectations they would never admit to this internally, our expectations are always really high, right? But I think externally, when you look at this team, expectations have fallen because they are coming off a 9-7 season, which is by no means a failure. You won 9 games, but when you're playing against the Niners and you have the Seahawks in your division, obviously 9 wins didn't get it done. But they have 3 new coordinators. They don't have Todd Gurley. They don't have Brandon Cooks. Then we talk about Brandon Staley. He might be a young up-and-comer, but he's never called a play in the NFL. So you have to take that into account. So I don't want to say that they're going to get a pass this year, but I also think that you can't necessarily fairly judge this team and this coaching staff off of this offseason because it has been so extraordinary. But I do think come 2021, we're really going to have to see strong results from Sean McVay and this new staff that he's put together. Before you start to wonder kind of what some of these decisions were to let go of a veteran like Wade Phillips, and when you really look at some of these contracts that they've now unloaded in Gurley and Cooks.
So, you know, I get that those are on the coaching staff, but at some level they're on the general manager and the front office too, right? I mean, are they all under scrutiny? Are they all under consideration here? Is it, you know, it kind of seems like a lot of those decisions are more front office based than coaching staff.
Yeah, so the coaching staff decisions, those are Sean McVay decisions. But no, definitely the contracts, those come down on the front office without question. And, you know, you really start to wonder, you know, very quickly they built a Super Bowl contender. You can't take that away. That was a job well done. They got to the Super Bowl in 2018. But now we're starting to kind of see the fallout from that, and really – it's when you're kind of making these trades and giving up first-round picks and you're trading away future talent to get guys on kind of borrowed time, you know, like Marcus Peters was. You start to wonder. And now that they have signed all these guys to these really big, splashy, record-breaking deals, But now you wonder, okay, Todd Gurley's gone. Brandon Cooks, that was a huge contract and one that they're really going to be paying for this season. He's gone, and with him essentially a first-round pick that they traded for him. With Jalen Ramsey, two first-round picks, and now they have to pay him. And so you kind of start to see they have a roster that's very top-heavy and expensive talent, and you look down it, and it is a lot of inexperience. And so if things don't go well, it very much also will be on the front office.
So Mason just texted us, and he said 10-6, which, by the way, is the record I picked, too. I think that they're going to catch people since they're not on the radar, as you kind of alluded to. I do think – I believe in Sean in that sense. Like, I think that they may surprise some people this year. But, you know, Mason, you know, he's part of the Ramley, Section 6. Well, my guess is no longer Section 6, whatever his new section will be. That he wants to tell you – he's yelling at me, exclamation marks here. Tell Lindsay 10-6.
Tell Mason, hi Mason, 8-8. I have the Rams at 8-8. I've actually spoken to a few people in the building who think it might be 7-9.
Whoa!
Cover your ears.
Whoa! All right.
Now, I've also spoken to people who think they could get to 10 wins. So it's I've ranged everywhere from 6 wins to up to 11 wins in my unofficial polling.
Okay, fair enough. Now, the most important question, one that we were discussing yesterday on the show, Lindsay, and I haven't even asked Ramona yet, but since you're here, I will ask you, who has the best fast food fries?
I would say McDonald's.
Yeah, thank you, because we were discussing that yesterday, and Laura and I agreed it was McDonald's, and it started because the conversation on social media yesterday was that In-N-Out Burger, for as great as their burgers are, their fries, not so good.
Not so good. Yeah,
fries,
I agree with that.
The fries you have to get, like, get them well done. But even then, they're just not, they're not up to McDonald's fries. McDonald's by far the best.
Thank you, Lindsay. Lindsay Theory, not only an NFL insider, but a fries insider as
Wait.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Not come on the show without at least a little below deck talk with Ramona.
Oh,
I watched
amazing.
This week.
Did you catch up?
Oh, yeah. I caught up. She texted me last week saying, like, I can't believe this season. It's so good. Already better than Below Deck Sailing Yacht. And I was like, I haven't seen this week yet. And then, of course, it spurred me to watch it. And, like, Laura's gone. She's out. Like, bye, Felicia. Like, it was.
Yeah.
And the guy who, like, the best part to me, Jordan, let me see if I can summarize this. There was an Italian stewardess who worked on the boat who had a horrible attitude. Like, just great reality TV show character because she stirs things up and everybody, like, immediately hates her. But the question is, how long is she going to stay? One of the guys just thought she was hot and really liked her, but I don't even think he learned her real name. He kept calling her Lana.
Yeah.
Except for her name is Laura. Anyway, they went out, and then he was mad because instead of, at the end of the night, instead of, like, going back and hanging out together and doing whatever you do on the boat, he had to go pee and missed his moment. And then when he came back, she was like already in bed. And he was like, what?
See ya.
And then, then the next morning, they wake up and she decides, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm out. And so this guy is like sent to like bring her stuff to her because she's leaving. And everybody is like, oh, thank God we hated her. And this guy's all broken up to the point where they got all these shots of him sniffling like he's sad and crying.
And where is the show? Like, what channel is it? Where can
Bravo.
I find this? Was it on Netflix? Is it on Hulu?
So
and let me tell you, hearing Momo's recap of it right now makes me feel so ashamed that I just got that excited about it because this is how good in our lives.
And Below Deck, where can I find Below Deck?
Bravo.
It's
like
our network.
Is this an Andy Cohen show?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. It's basically the life and times of the yachties, you know, of people who work on super yachts. And they and then obviously, you know, the stupid people who go on these yachts and agree to like have it all filmed, they just make fun of them the whole time. So there's a real upstairs downstairs quality
to
it.
I see.
But you know, the staff is great. Like they have like certain characters that show up every year. Like Kate is the stewardess who's on every single year. And you know, they have certain characters. So you get used to these characters.
All right.
But then there's the rotating cast of, like, there's new people each year, too. And
I will do what I normally do on shows. I will give it 3 episodes.
Okay.
And if within 3 episodes it doesn't capture me, I'm out. All right?
Okay.
That's the move.
No, George, okay, then go back on your on demand or whatever you use and start with this season. It is good. It's great stuff.
Okay.
Great.
It's only been three episodes this season, so you can jump right in.
Yeah, so you can catch up.
I will jump right in. Lindsay Theory, Below Deck expert, NFL insider, and fries expert with us here. Thank you, Lindsay. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm proud of one of those three things. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you later.
See ya. There she is, Lindsay Theory. All right. Coming up next, we're going to be up in, we're going to be back in 2.5 minutes, but we still haven't gotten to the June 17th anniversary. You and I, Momo, will comb through the NBA manual. What's happening? How is it happening? How is it going to affect players? How will it affect teams? How will it affect the Lakers, the Clippers, etc.? We'll get to all that in 2.5 minutes. Sit down over here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Commercial insurance through Progressive protects your business and your dream. Choose from over 30 coverage options at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Don't forget, Thank You Thursdays, presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone working as a healthcare worker or frontline worker and you want to nominate them, we're going to hook them up with a $500 thank you gift. You can email us at ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. That's ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. First, last name, city, and occupation. Or you can post a short video on Instagram or Twitter, including the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker here on the station and award them a $500 thank you gift, which includes a $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change and three $100 gift cards, one to Wingstop, one to VSLiquor.com, and one to Shooteria.com. So Mama Momo's hanging out with us here. All right, Mama Momo. So let's comb through the manual for a second here. Let's comb through the manual, but let's do the fun stuff because we already know. We'll go quickly through the testing part of it. All right. So what happens if a player tests positive, Momo? What do we got?
Well, according to, I mean, I have the 113 page manual, but Brian Windhorst and Tim Bontemps just did the Cliff Notes for us. So thank you very much, Brian and Tim. player test positive.
Yeah.
They will undergo a period of rest and recovery lasting at least 14 days.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. Once they come back though, they're going to be while they're out and resting, doctors are really concerned about potential cardiovascular risks that come along with having the virus.
Yeah.
So they're going to be restricted during that period. And they'll have to pass cardiac tests before a return to basketball is even considered. So you think that concussion protocol is tough.
This is for real. Yeah.
This is for real.
We've got that. And then in regards to how many people would have to test positive for the league to hold again, it's not really spelled out, but it is clear the league is preparing for positive tests. So what constitutes a critical mass? Well, we'll have to kind of figure that out as we go.
Yeah,
right.
The things that are actually the most thorny issues, sort of vague.
One
player told me, you know, I'm really concerned about special treatment. Like if somebody leaves the quarantine, if let's say Anthony Davis or LeBron leaves or Giannis, the punishment for those guys should be the same as it is for a role player.
Correct.
Right? We can't have special treatment. So I looked very specifically at that section and there are very general outlines. It says, leaving quarantine can be a punishment of a warning. Maybe a fine, not just leaving, but breaking the rules.
Yeah.
Okay? Warranting, fine, suspension to possible removal with repeat offenders facing enhanced discipline. Well, let me tell you about some of the enhanced discipline. All right. If somebody leaves the bubble, if somebody actually like leaves and you know, whether it's authorized or unauthorized, no one's going to stop them from leaving. But if you leave without approval and you want to come back, a player or staff or whoever it is will face at least 10 days in quarantine and you have to undergo the deep nasal testing. So basically, if you leave, we're going to poke your brain out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right?
Yeah, that's it. And then as far as players who don't want to go, basically, if you have a doctor's note, you're good, for lack of a better phrase. If you
there's
don't.
Some players who have kids that are due during that time. I know of a few whose wives or girlfriends are pregnant. So if you have an excused absence, this is interesting.
Yeah.
The birth of a child, family emergency, whatever. So you have an excused absence. The returning player would require 4 days in quarantine as long as the person tested negative for COVID each day they were away from the campus. So like, let's say you go to be with your wife when she's giving birth. You got to test positive on the day you leave. All the days that you're gone. And
you mean positive, negative.
Test negative all those days. And then you have to, quarantine for four more days and test again.
Right.
When you come back. But at least it's not 10 days.
Right, right, for sure. And that's an excused absence. So then what are the games going to be like? So it's going to be three different arenas, no outside fans, obviously, a limited number of players. In the stands, you'll see media, team executives, union personnel, league officials, things like that. There'll be a public address announcer. There'll be piping in the sound, NBA 2K, which, by the way, I'm looking at soccer Twitter right now, and they are mad about the soccer match Ooh. Going on right now and the sound that's coming through. Not everyone is happy about that. As far as what a game day will look like in the bubble, it looks pretty much like the similar schedule that players are going to have during road games during a regular season. It's not going to be very different from that. So now I'll get to this. You mentioned the stuff about players leaving. Now, there's stuff about wearing masks, right? If you're outside, you don't need to wear masks. But if you're indoors, you have to wear masks. And then there's a narc line, basically, that you and I alluded to earlier. And we joked that there's a meme about LeBron saying, yes, league, I'd like to tell you, yes, indeed, it was Giannis and Kawhi who were outside without their masks. By the way, there's another funny meme out there by Josiah Johnson about agents not being in the bubble. And all of a sudden, it's a picture of Rich Paul with the Mickey Mouse ears hat on, which is also very funny. However, the other part of this is, now let me ask you this, who is the player most likely to snitch? Because Twitter has already named the player they think it's going to be.
Okay. this is a terrible, terrible question to ask me. I'm going to go with Austin Rivers.
Oh, Austin, son of a coach. Yeah, so that's not a bad one. But the Twitter has said Chris Paul, because remember Chris Paul, you know, he had that situation where he told the referee about the guy not having his shirt tucked in.
Okay. So he made all the rules, though. So that's the thing. If he snitches, then it's a little self-serving.
There is that.
And you'd probably just get a teammate to do it.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the hotel stuff. So the Lakers, the top four seeds in each conference are going to stay at the same hotel called the Grand Destino, which is a really nice place. And then the other place, a very nice place as well, for the 5-8 seeds, the Grand Floridian. And then the Yacht Club, which I think is really nice, even though Brian Windhorst isn't a fan, is going to occupy the teams in the play-in tournament, or the teams that could be in the play-in tournament. But here's what I think. We were just talking about Giannis's free agency and potential free agency and how the salary cap next year could be affected and whatnot. But you know what could also be affected? Tampering in that Grand Destino. And let me tell you something. All sorts of tampering is happening at the Grand Destino. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, you're not supposed to go in each other's rooms. Right? You can't, right? No player can go in another player's room, but you can eat together at restaurants. And if you want to eat with somebody at a different hotel, you have to eat outside. Right. So that's a little more broad daylight, but you know, I'm just thinking about all the different restaurants that they got there. There's the players' lounge, there's movie nights, lawn bowling. Think about all the tampering that could happen at lawn bowling, George.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. You know, Giannis has been, there's a lot of talk about Giannis, like, I don't like to work out with other guys. He's a lot like Kobe, I don't know. You're spending 3 months with a bunch of guys. All of a sudden, you can chummy up to a lot of different dudes.
Plus, okay, you can bring your trainer or your masseuse or whatever, but it counts as part of one of the 37 people on staff.
Right, that the teams are allowed to bring. Right, yeah.
So most likely only like one of those types of people are going to go, whether it's, you know, a trainer.
Right. Even if he's, I mean, we know LeBron's guy, Mike Mancias, is definitely going to be one of them.
Yeah. So if Mike's there, like, you know, don't you think he should also work with some of the other players on the team?
Yeah. He could be like, hey, Giannis, do you want to work with me? Don't worry about LeBron. He won't be jealous. He'll be just fine with me and you working out together.
Or you could have, like, you guys go on to go work out together. I got my trainer here. You could all use him. We could have a workout session. It's like going to the gym together.
Yeah. I think Laker fans' ears are all perking up now. And, you know, Clipper fans, too. You know, maybe, I mean, listen, Kawhi's supposedly a fun guy, right? We'll find out how fun he is in Disney.
They got excursions for fishing trips. Paul George on the fishing trip, man.
Right, with Giannis?
Yeah,
you never know.
I can just see it now.
You never know. I've also heard that Toronto is like one of these teams that we shouldn't discount when it comes to Giannis's free agency.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that makes sense, right? Masai Ujiri is one of the founders. I don't want to say, is he a founder of it? I think he's a founder of NBA Africa.
Yeah.
and has deep connections to Giannis, just, you know, based on Giannis's family history and story. Mm-hmm. And I know he really wanted to draft him. He was one of the, he was trying to trade up to draft him when Giannis came into the league. So that would be interesting.
So the Grandestino will now be known as the Tamper Hotel. So just make sure that you are aware of that. All right. So Mark Spears is going to join us next. Momo, he had a he has some thoughts on Kyrie Irving and his positioning on the coalition, as it's been dubbed here recently, and Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard and those guys. Will talk to Mark. Mark also spoke to John Wall recently today about his thoughts, even though he's not attending the bubble. So we will hear from Mark Spears in just a moment. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mark Spears of the Undefeated, an NBA insider here at ESPN, giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Mark, my man, thank you so much for joining us. Always good catching up with you. And so let's start here. Look, there's a lot of talk. Ramona and I have been having this conversation. I've been having this conversation for the last couple of days about Kyrie Irving and Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, and that positioning. Where do you fall on all of this stuff that Kyrie really spearheaded here?
Well, I think you take what their message and their enthusiasm, and you bring it to the NBA and say, okay, what are you going to do? And I think a lot of the things that Avery talked about are things that the Players Association was already thinking about pushing to the league. I'm being told that the Players Association and the membership, which includes the players, have been working on several things that they want to bring to the NBA, in terms of making change or wanting during the games. And I'm talking from a social reform and police and justice mentality, that I think a lot of things that Bradley talked about are things that the Players Association wants. So they're getting that list together in the near future. They're going to go to the NBA and tell them what they want. And this isn't, this isn't Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf's NBA. This is an NBA that, obviously through Donald Sterling, as you guys know, in LA, Adam Silver in a lot of ways has the players back. So you got a willing audience that wants to implement change and help the players get their message across. So I don't think that what they're concerned about will be a problem. I think the NBA is going to help them make it happen.
So, Mark, I was curious because you and I obviously talked a lot about players boycotting and sitting out after the Donald Sterling tapes came out. And this felt like a similar conversation, and yet there's a really important difference, is that, that was Donald Sterling, an NBA owner, making those comments. And this is just, systemic racism in our country. I know you were, you thought the players in 2014 really should have protested and not played those games. Like, why is this different?
Because then at that point, I still thought that was Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf's NBA. Mm. you know what I mean? Silver hadn't made a decision. They hadn't done anything yet. So I didn't know whether to trust the NBA in terms of helping. Now I do trust the NBA. Adam Silver ended up being the person that shut him down. There are also going to be a number of players like Durant and Kyrie and Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Trae Young and, Draymond Green, who can still do things on the outside. I do think that the platform is different now. At that time, I don't think most of the media cared. They reported it, but I think until perhaps a month and a half ago, most of the media either didn't care, was scared to talk about it, had a blind eye to it. And now I think you have a media contingent who is all like, look, I want to help. I want to educate. I want to get the word out. That wasn't the case even during the Donald Sterling thing. So if this is the NFL, I'd probably feel the other way, but in terms of the NBA, the change in heart from a lot of media people and motivation, change in heart from companies who have these statements that you have to put, you know, pressure on these statements for them to do things back in the community. I just really feel a different confidence in how now change could be made, where before I was a little very skeptical.
Mark Spears, undefeated, joining us here, NBA insider as well. Mark, look, I think that, you know, as you kind of alluded to there, the NBA historically, particularly under Adam.
Can I say one thing, too?
Sure, go ahead.
I think, too, there's a financial aspect that Damon Lillard talked about the other day as well, where, you know, this isn't like playoff shares. This is real money involved. And you're talking about a time now where you could not only blare your horn for 3.5 months, but I think they could get the NBA to do perhaps what the NFL did and get $250 million or more. And the players need to be able to push that into the community as they want to. They need to tell the different shoe companies and other endorsement people to put monies into the community. They could perhaps implement change in terms of hiring practices. I think there's a lot of things of power that they could I think that there's, you know, things they could do powerfully with the money that they're going to make, like Damian Lillard said, in terms of helping their own communities. So I do think their power and their financial impact also is much different now and can play a role in shaking everything up.
Mm. Mark Spears of the Undefeated again with us here and ESPN NBA Insider. And that was just kind of what I was going to allude to, which was that I feel like historically, but particularly under Adam Silver, you look at this league and the way that they have been very open, right, in being partners with the players on a number of different fronts, whether it's, you know, stuff involving the Players Association, whether it's social justice, whether it's just stuff on the court, right? Like, they've been very amenable to anything the players, for the most part, want to do when it comes to stuff off the court. And but I thought what you brought up there, the shoe companies, right? Because this, all this stuff is going to get pushed forward by the people in power, and the people in power are the people with money. And you have to, that's how change really happens in this country, because it's not just even though voting at the ballot box is important, and what LeBron is doing right now with More Than a Vote is incredibly important. Also, the finances are a big part of this. So to your point, how likely do you think it is that not just the league, because I feel like we all feel pretty confident about the league stepping up here, but just the other aspects of this, the shoe companies, et cetera, being more involved when it comes to this stuff?
Well, I mean, like as you see with the NFL and their statement, like the players got power. I think the NBA players have always gotten it. They know they have power. So I wouldn't be surprised if the companies that endorse them have already said, hey, we'd like to do this. I heard a rumor and that I'll just say this. I'll tell Ramona Hu off the air so she could get the scoop. But there's one NBA owner who has said, like, hey, guys, whatever you donate to whatever cause, I'm willing to match it.
Huh.
Like, when was that happening?
Cool.
So I do think that there's some things that there's some power that they could have now, whether it's with their endorsement companies, whether it's with the teams, whether it's with the media. But never have they had not only this much power, but people that are like, look, we're listening. And I could, this, you know, when we were going through Rodney King, man, I didn't have no cell phone. I didn't have, you know, the ability to go on YouTube or Google. So even a kid that perhaps has a racist upbringing and they love LeBron James and they're watching the game, and LeBron James has, you know, George Floyd on his shoes, and, you know, Anthony Davis is wearing Black Lives Matter, Kyrie on his shirt, or, you know, Kawhi Leonard is, or Paul George is, that kid might go search on his own what these guys are fighting for, despite the coldness that might even be in his own family. So I think they have an impact to make an influence on the youth that they wouldn't in when we were younger, because they didn't have the same access to us and the ability to give the same message.
Mm. Hey, Mark, what do you make of Kyrie Irving and Avery Bradley? Like, the, you know, just
how this whole thing came about, the process, their motivations, like how they've gone about, you know, articulating them. What's your read on it?
I understand their passion, and they have a lot of good points. So I think where they made it difficult was like doing, say, a meeting on the phone in which people that probably shouldn't have been in that meeting were on the meeting, which made it tough for, say, a Chris Paul and the board to really talk about what they could really do and counter. There was, you know, people on the call that were like media. There were people on the call that were like associates. WNBA players were on the call, and I was told that the Players Association guys were really uncomfortable, Chris Paul included, in terms of like really talking about what they could and could not do, or being honest, having a real honest conversation, because they didn't feel like it was a secure line. So I think the message should have been better in terms of having that conversation in a more secure place, because I think it put the Players Association representatives, the higher leadership, Michelle Roberts, in a position where they just had to sit back and listen, because they didn't know who was on there, who was like getting information, who was putting it out. Like it wasn't a safe place to have that conversation. So I understand what those guys are saying, and there's strong merit. So I think, but from what I'm hearing from the Players Association, is they're going to take, like, they're not going to disband the league. Don't worry about that. But the great things that Avery Bradley was talking about in terms of pushing for more diversity in front offices and coaching staffs and giving back to the community and those kind of things, I think those were things that the Players Association wanted to do anyway.
Mark Spears of The Undefeated with us here. Let's talk real quick with you about the bubble atmosphere and what's going to happen when guys are there. What do you think the biggest issue is going to be for players once they're there?
From what I was told from a player today, I mean, obviously there's always going to be COVID concerns, but I do think it's going to be one of the healthier environments in the world. I think they are concerned about the Disney employees coming in and out, but they're unionized. There's nothing they could do about that, and I'm sure they'll be professional and keep their distance, and I want somebody to clean my room if I'm there, right? Give me some food. But I think the biggest thing that they're going to be, the biggest challenge is, like, look, George and Ramona, I love you, but, you know, I want my wife to be there too. You know what I mean? Like, not having your spouse, not having your kid, like, for like almost a month and a half, like, that's got to be tough, man. Like, being around the guys is cool and all that, and the video games and ping pong and, you know, DJ Khaled zooming in to play a set or whatever. That's all cool, and the food's going to be great. The food's going to be great. But, you know, you want some loved ones in there with you to help you go through it. So I actually think once they get to that second round and those guys, and it's the NBA assistant coach told me, like, man, my wife can't be there with me. Like, once you get to that spot, I think the place will be a much better – will be in a much better mood because they'll have their loved ones with them.
Yeah, Mark, I think that's one of the biggest things is just, you know, players are used to being on the road for a long time. They're used to not seeing their families for a long time. But there's always, like, a day here or a day there that you can drop in and out. And this really isn't that. Like, you can't go in and out. You can FaceTime, you can chat. And I think one of the things I've heard is just, you know, players have been doing that for 3 months, but at least they've been home with their families. And, you know, even though you're giving up some freedom being in quarantine, like, it's actually been kind of a nice time for a lot of folks. And I'm wondering, like, do you think because this has been such a long layoff, like the NBA and the momentum and enthusiasm for resuming the season has faded a little bit? Like, that's kind of what I'm picking up on when I talk to people. Like, there's just time has passed, you know, it's just time has passed. We're all in a different world now, and it just doesn't feel like the season outside of the four or five teams that think they got a chance to win it. Like, it just, it doesn't feel as meaningful right now.
Ramona, I'm watching in the background Aston Villa versus Sheffield United.
Yeah.
I am so excited about my Arsenal coming back to play in about 30 minutes.
Like, okay.
I say that to say, I think the NBA world is going to be super enthusiastic about watching them play. I think that whether it's on ABC or Turner or ESPN or on your phone or on your tablet, I think the numbers are going to be higher than normal because a lot of us aren't really doing nothing. And so it's going to be weird not having fans there, and it's going to be weird in a lot of respects, but the storylines I think are going to be tremendous. Can Zion get over Ja and get in? You know, will the Clippers like end up having to do a virtual parade and spoil the Lakers' plans? You know, yeah. Like there's so many storylines. I think once they get there, the excitement is going to be outrageous for this league. Like I'm watching, like I've been watching cherry spitting competitions, cornhole.
Like, what about the cherry spitting?
Costa Rican soccer.
Oh man!
Korean baseball is absolutely awful. These dudes are the worst fielders I've ever seen. I'm like, my little league team is better fielders than these cats. So I'm gonna go to see the NBA, like to see the Premier League soccer right now, like. What that's my Saturday morning. That's my Sunday morning. Okay. I'm like, I'm excited for soccer. So basketball is just a whole different level for me. And I think that's the one thing about like, look, Ramona, you know, I'll raise my fist before anybody media now. I think they need to shut it down. I'd say shut it down. You know, I have no problem saying that. I've said that in past occasions, but I just think the ability to constantly give people a message about social injustice and racism and police brutality, like constantly throughout the game in some way, shape, or form, is really, really valuable. And this is just a different social media world. So I actually think the players could use this to their advantage in a way that we've never, never seen before. Like I'm watching, soccer is the most racist sport in the world, and these dudes got Black Lives Matter on the back of their jersey.
Yeah.
And a Black Lives Matter patch. Like, there's somebody with a cold heart watching this game that's like, all right, well, maybe I should pay attention to this a little more. Some kid that's going to be influenced.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited for basketball to come back, and I believe that the rest of the sports world are going to follow suit.
Mark, I got less than 2 minutes here. How many people are calling that snitch line?
Oh, man, I have the last dude on my bench. I'm going, since the Lakers and the Clippers in the same hotel, I'm like, yo, who's the last dude on the Clippers bench? Give me a name. You would know better than me.
Terrence Mann,
you just keep watching LeBron, man. Keep watching Anthony Davis. Watch what they're doing, and then snitch. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's going to be a lot of game and shit there. And vice versa. Whoever's last dude on the Lakers bench, they need to be snitching too, man. I think it's going to be funny. But I do think there's going to be a brotherhood that's going to come there. And I'm being in jest with the other thing, but there's going to be a brotherhood that's going to come there with all the players, especially the team, because you're trying to do something that will be a documentary 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. Hopefully in a much better world for y'all kids, you know, that people will look back, man, remember when we were in Orlando for that time, man? Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, I think it's going to be a odd and special time for those guys that will get better once their family comes and that they'll remember in a lifetime and hopefully remember as something that helped bring social change.
And one last question for you. We've been asking everybody because we got into this argument here on the show yesterday. Yesterday on Twitter, two nights ago, it was trending on Twitter that as good as In-N-Out burgers are, their fries not so great. Who's got the best fast food fries, Mark Spears? Give it to me.
McDonald's.
Yeah? Yeah? They're the one seed.
I agree.
Thank you.
One seed. What is it about them? They're crispy.
They put sugar on them.
They put sugar on them? What?
Look it up. They put sugar on the fries. That's why they're so sweet. How is potato sweet? You got to put sugar on it.
Laura says no. Laura, what happened? What?
No, I used to work there, so I know for a fact we don't put sugar. They don't put sugar on them. It's the oil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the oil they use. That's
the
why
oil doesn't have sugar.
No, it doesn't.
People that work,
the people at KFC don't know the original herbs and spices. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know.
That's
I don't
true.
Know if they told you the recipe.
Trust me. I burned myself enough, Mark, to know there's no sugar in those fries.
All right. There we go. Okay. Mark Spears of the Undefeated.
Well, their fries is bomb. Yeah. I'll still go with their fries. And shout out to the, I'm going to go to the White Castle and the Jack in the Box Sourdough Jack.
Ooh, I like that too. That's great. All
Ooh,
right, Mark,
that's good.
Mark
Sourdough
Spears,
Jack is good.
The Undefeated. Check out his work
hungry.
There. Yeah, I'm hungry too. Show's almost over, so that's fine. Mark, thank you, man. Always appreciate it, brother. Be good.
All right, family. Y'all take care.
All right, take care.
Thanks,
there
Mark.
He is, Mark Spears. All right. Momo, you and I will have, we will get your thoughts on the French fry debate. We will get to the June 17th anniversary, and we've got breaking news in Major League Baseball, but it is conflicting breaking news. We'll get to that in 90 seconds. All right, Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out all day. Thanks to Mark Spears. Thanks to Lindsay Theory who joined us earlier. Tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast with our friend Mina Kimes, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of hundreds of ESPN's reporters. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review the ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. And thanks to our friends at Pennzoil Synthetic Motor Oils, made from natural gas, gives you an unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. So, Momo, here's the breaking news. So, Jeff Passan... Okay. Actually, let's start here. John Heyman of MLB Network is saying this. Okay. I'm gonna find the Heyman tweets. Hold on. Heyman. All right. Heyman tweets. He started off by saying, breaking, MLB and Players Union are closing in on agreement to play the 2020 season via players. Deal expected to be for prorated pay, included expanded playoffs. But then Jeff Passan stopped by and said, not here, but on Twitter, and said Major League Baseball has sent a new proposal to MLB Players Association, sources tell ESPN, but no deal is done. But with Rob Manfred and Tony Clark having met, this is seen as significant progress considering where the parties were 48 hours ago. Then Heyman came in over the top of Passan again and said, as part of the pending agreement to play the 2020 season between MLB and the Players Union, the union has agreed to waive any grievance. So there's a lot of stuff out there. Now, all seems positive towards a baseball season, but conflicting breaking news. And as I say conflicting, I'm throwing up a big X above my head.
Okay. So what do you think's happening? Like, what? Read me between those lines.
So I think that clearly Manfred and Tony Clark, like, we need to iron this thing out. But as you pointed out earlier, they need to stop with the legal ramifications here. And he basically probably said to him, this is my guess, Manfred probably told Tony Clark, look, if you drop this thing, like Momo was saying on the Sedano show, if you drop the legal stuff, we can move forward and we can find a way to kind of bridge the gap. And that's my guess is what's happening here.
Yeah, I think they're down to it. And I think Manfred made a mistake the other night. I think the flip-flop was a public relations mistake.
Terrible.
It was bad. And I don't know how you – I don't think he can turn that around. I know he's talking on behalf of the owners because I know baseball owners are – the players afterwards, you know, I talked to one player who said – They have never been as united now after Rob Manfred's latest statements, right? After the way this has gone, all the calls, everybody that they've been having with the union, like they are more united than ever. And I get the same feeling from the owners. They're more united behind Rob Manfred than ever. Like even, you know, like just this past, you know, a few months ago, they all hated Rob because of the way the Astros and the Red Sox scandals were handled. Nope. Totally turned around. They're all behind him 100%. So when you have two sides that are deeply, deeply entrenched into their positions, it really does come down to the people in charge finding a way to bridge the gap, finding some common ground and finding a way to like – and I really just think as long as both of them take off the legal threat, we're going to have a deal.
Since I don't have any ramifications because I don't cover baseball, I'm just going to step out there and say, I think baseball's back. I think baseball's back.
Yeah.
I'm going to step out on that limb. I think baseball's back. All right, June 17th, 1994. Here's the anniversary for stuff. You ready for this? It's a crazy day for anniversaries. In baseball, Ken Griffey Jr. had his 30th home run in a particular season, 1994, which was tied for the most up until that point in the season during at that point, any point during that season, or excuse me, the most home runs at any point in Major League Baseball history up until that point. The Rangers won their had their Stanley Cup parade. We remember obviously that that was like they broke a, like a 60-year curse. The New York Rangers. The U.S. hosted its first World Cup here in 1994 on that day.
Oh, I remember that.
Arnold Palmer's final U.S. Open was that day, and of Game 5 of the 1994 NBA Finals and the O.J. Chase. We didn't talk about the O.J. Chase today.
Wow.
We dropped the ball there. Yeah.
And the Lakers won a title today?
2010, yes.
2010.
Yes. Yeah.
That was when Kobe passed the ball to Ron Artest.
Yes, and Powell had a monster game, and Sasha the Machine came off cold. A cold machine came off the bench to shoot free throws.
Yeah. Kobe passed me the ball. Whatever. I'll never forget Ron Artest's press conference. Yeah. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, Momo, we appreciate you. We got to run. We're up against it. Thank you, Momo. Thanks, Lindsay Theory, Mark Spears, Greg, Laura, all of you tuned in. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. See ya.